Mahabharata, Part 2, Deliverance. Chapter 49, The Armies Prepare. After installing Justadumna as his commander-in-chief, Yudhisthira and his generals consulted Krishna. They had heard that Duryodhan had requested Bhishma to be the Kuru's commander-in-chief, and that he had accepted. Yudhisthira then asked Arjuna to be his army's chief general, working immediately under Justadumna. He wanted to ensure that Arjuna's incomparable expertise was utilized fully in the battle. The seven divisions of the Pandava army were then placed under their seven commanders. As the Pandavas were speaking about the arrangements, Balaram arrived. He entered Yudhisthira's tent in the company of Akrura, Uddhava, Samba, Pradyumna, and other leading personalities from Dwarka. In his blue garments and garlanded by golden flowers, Balaram looked as majestic as Mount Kailash. Krishna stood to greet him, and all the kings did the same. They worshipped him with affection. Yudhisthira took Balaram's hands and greeted him warmly, showing him to a fine seat. After Balaram had saluted elders such as Drupada and Virata, he took his seat and said, "Many men are about to be slaughtered. Surely fate has ordained it, and it cannot be avoided. It is the hour of death for all these Kshatriyas. The earth is about to become a mass of clay thickened with flesh and blood. I hope you heroes will emerge alive and well." Repeatedly did I request Krishna to act equally toward both the Kauravas and Pandavas, but he chose to favor you. Krishna looked at his elder brother and smiled. Balaram glanced at him as he continued, "Keshava has set his heart upon your interests, and especially the interests of Dhananjaya. Your victory is assured because Krishna desires it. I cannot at any time act separately from him. Therefore, I will play no part in the war. Both Duryodhan and Bhima are my pupils at mace fighting, and both are equally dear to me. I cannot bear to fight against either. Therefore, I have decided to leave the area and go on a pilgrimage to the holy places, because I know I would not be able to sit by and indifferently watch the massacre." Balaram stood up and placed his helmet on his head. Taking leave of Krishna and the Pandavas, he left, followed by the Yadavas who had come with him. Soon the Pandavas received another visitor. It was Rukmi, king of Bhishmaka's son and Krishna's brother-in-law. He arrived with a full Akshahini division of warriors. To please his sister, he had decided to offer his assistance to her husband's side. Twanging his bow, he strode into Yudhisthira's tent where the Pandavas received him respectfully. He said, "O great ruler, if you are afraid at the prospect of war with the Kurus, then I am here to help you. There are none who can match my prowess. Your enemies will not be able to bear my might. Whatever part of their army you allot to me as my share will be ground into the earth. Even Bhishma, Drona, and Kripa cannot face me. I will defeat the Kurus and deliver you the earth." Arjuna could not tolerate Rukmi's proud speech. He laughed. "I was born in the Kuru race, and I am Pandu's son and Drona's pupil, and I have Keshava's assistance. How can I be afraid of the enemy? O hero, when I faced the Gandharvas, who was my friend then? When I fought the furious Danavas in the netherworlds, who came to my aid? Then again, in the battle with the Kurus in the Matsya kingdom, who was my helper? I am not afraid, Rukmi. We have no need of your help. Go wherever you please, or stay here if you like. Either way, we will fight with the Kurus and win." Seeing the other warriors agreeing with Arjuna, Rukmi scowled. Taking up his bow, he marched out of the tent without a word. He then took his soldiers to Duryodhan. If the Pandavas did not want him, then he would fight with the Kauravas. At least he had offered his help to Yudhisthira first. Actually, he was just as happy to fight for Duryodhan. Rukmi still remembered his sister Swayamvara, in which he had wanted her to select Shishupal. Krishna had come and kidnapped Rukmini. Rukmi had then chased Krishna and fought with him, only to be defeated and humiliated. Maybe now he could exact his revenge. Going before Duryodhan, he repeated the words he had used when speaking to Yudhisthira. "Do not be afraid of the Pandavas, O king, for I am here to help you." Duryodhan also rejected him. "I have no need of your help," he laughed. "What fear do I have of the Pandavas, surrounded as I am by the world's greatest heroes, and being a mighty warrior myself?" Rukmi left the Kauravas and returned home, deciding to play no part in the war. If no one wanted his help, then he would not fight. Let them annihilate one another without him. After Rukmi left, Duryodhan summoned his counselors. He had Shakuni's son, Uluka, come as a messenger to the Pandavas. Assured of his superior position, the prince wanted to mock his enemies and show his contempt for their so-called army. Duryodhan said, "O Uluka, go to the Pandavas and speak these words in Krishna's hearing. The time has now come for action. What we have expected for a long time is finally coming to pass. We are about to fight a frightful war between ourselves, and you have caused it. Prove now the truth of all the boastful words you sent through Sanjaya. Let us see your actual power." Duryodhan's black eyes narrowed. Standing up as he spoke, he pointed at Uluka. "Say this to Yudhisthira. How do you pose as a virtuous man, O descendant of Bharata? You now desire to destroy the world for the sake of wealth. One who presents himself as pious, while secretly concealing wicked intentions, is said to be like the cat in the famous story of old. Listen to the story my father heard from Narada Rishi. Once there was a cat who went to the Ganges. Standing on the bank with upraised paws, he said, 'I shall practice virtue.' After some time, the birds began to trust him and even praise him for his devotions. The cat continued with his austerities, and in due course the mice also saw the cat's peaceful demeanor and long-time pious practices. They decided to take shelter of him, although he was naturally their enemy. They said, 'We seek your protection. You are our refuge and our best friend. Be like an uncle to us and save us from our antagonists. You are virtuously inclined and have adopted a pious course.' The cat reluctantly agreed, 'I will do what I can for you, but I also need your help. My austerities have made me so weak I cannot move. Therefore, some of you must assist me to reach the riverside each day so that I can bathe.' The mice agreed to do this and began to live around the cat. Every day, a number of them would go to the river with him, and the cat would eat them. Thus, the cat grew fatter and stronger, while the mice diminished in number. They soon realized what was happening. One wise mouse among them pointed out that an animal living on fruits and roots cannot have hairs in its feces. He concluded, 'This cat only makes a show of devotion. His real business is eating mice.' The mice fled in all directions, and the wicked cat also went back to where he had come from. 'O Yudhisthira, you are behaving in the same way towards your kinsmen. Your words mean one thing, while your acts are quite different. Give up your disguise as a gentle and harmless man. Come out and fight like a true Kshatriya. Dry your mother's tears by winning victory in battle, if you can. Remember our former antagonism, poison, the lack house, the insult to Draupadi. Show us your real strength.'" Duryodhan laughed. He derided the Pandavas in various ways, mocking their power and praising his own. He reminded them of all the vows they had taken. Now they should fulfill them. Duryodhan remembered Krishna's universal form, which he had exhibited in Hastinapur. "Tell Vasudev that his display of illusion does not scare me. I too can show many forms. But what is the use of such things? O Keshava, come in that mystical form to the battlefield, and we will see what difference it will make. I know your power, and I know Arjuna's. I know the Gandiva bow and the inexhaustible quivers he holds, as well as the fiery chariot Agni gave him with its celestial banners. Still I challenge you. Indeed, I could face 1,000 Krishnas and 100 Arjunas and still have them flee in all directions. Even knowing everything about your power, I shall deprive you of your kingdom without fear." Duryodhan began to pace as he delivered his arrogant message. Karna, Dushasan, and Shakuni cheered his brave speech and encouraged him to say more. Duryodhan reminded the Pandavas of the dice game and their exile at his hands. "Is this not sufficient proof of my superiority? Bhima must have been tired as he cleaned pots in Bharata's kitchen. Arjuna wore bangles and braided hair. Yudhisthira became Bharata's servant. These are the ways a Kshatriya punishes others weaker than himself. I have no fear of the Pandavas, nor of Krishna, nor of any of the fools who have chosen to fight beside you. I will not return even the smallest part of your kingdom." Aluka memorized every word in the mood with which it was spoken, although Duryodhan spoke for almost an hour. He concluded, "Let the battle begin tomorrow. Then you will see your folly. Like a frog in a well who cannot know the ocean, you cannot know how vast are my forces. One who wishes to defeat Bhishma, Drona, and Kripa would rend a mountain with his head or swim across an ocean. When you see the Kuru forces assemble like a great sea, then your desire for the kingdom will disappear. All thoughts of ruling this world will vanish. Like a man who has never practiced devotion, desiring heaven, so is your hope for winning this kingdom. Tomorrow we will see who should be the earth's rightful ruler." Duryodhan then told Aluka to deliver the message at once. Aluka mounted his chariot and rode over to the Pandavas' camp, with Duryodhan's words ringing still in his head. He knew his message would incite the Pandavas' fury, and he approached Yudhisthira with apprehension. "Please see me only as an envoy. Knowing the law in relation to messengers, do not become angry when you hear my words. I will only speak what Duryodhan has told me to say, and nothing more." Yudhisthira smiled and showed Aluka to a seat in his tent. "Do not fear. You may speak freely here. Tell us what the small-minded Duryodhan, driven by greed and lacking in foresight, has said." Aluka looked around the tent. All the Pandava chiefs were present. With their bright armor and colorful silks, they resembled glowing planets decorating the firmament. They were all watching him and waiting for the message. When Aluka had finished, the Pandavas leapt from their seats. Speechless with rage, they stared at each other and ground their teeth. Their breath came in hot blasts, and they seemed like infuriated serpents. Bhima's eyes turned red, and he looked across at Krishna, who laughed and said, "O Aluka, go back to your master and tell him that we have heard his message and understood its meaning. Let it be as he says. The battle will begin tomorrow." Having heard Duryodhan's abusive words, the assembly of kings resembled the storm-tossed ocean. They rose up roaring and slapped their arms. Rubbing his hands together, Bhima roared, "O fool, we have heard your words, intended to rouse us to action, as if we were weak and inactive. Aluka, carry my reply back to your master." "O Duryodhan, only due to respect for our elder brother have we tolerated you for so long. The virtuous Yudhisthira has offered peace. You have refused. Pushed by your own fate, you now desire to meet Yamaraj. The battle will certainly begin tomorrow. I have vowed to slay you and all your brothers. Do not doubt my power to carry out this vow. The ocean may transgress its banks, the mountains may split asunder, but my words will not prove false. O you of little sense, not even the gods and demons combined can save you now. I will drink Dushasan's blood and grind the rest of the Kauravas into the earth. Any Kshatriya approaching me in anger will go at once to death's abode. I swear by my soul that I speak the truth. Sahadev then stepped forward. Tell this to the fool who gives you orders. Only because of you has this dispute arisen. You were born for the destruction of your own race, and indeed of the world. Goaded on by Shakuni, you have always acted with evil intentions toward us. You will soon be slain by me before all your warriors. Duryodhan's message was creating a tumult in the Pandava's tent. The kings and warriors shouted and waved their weapons at Avalokita. Arjuna calmed them. Then he turned to Bhima and said, O Bhimasen, be patient. Those who have made you their enemy will soon be destroyed. Nothing can save them. There is no need to rebuke Avalokita. He is only an envoy. What fault can an envoy commit? The words he spoke were not his own. Arjuna looked at the assembled kings. You have all heard Duryodhan's foul speech, directed even toward Krishna. With your leave, I will give my response. By now, Avalokita was trembling. Arjuna said, Tell Duryodhan, tomorrow you will have my reply delivered by the Gandiva. Only eunuchs use words. Arjuna took his seat by Yudhisthira's side, who then said, I have heard your master's words, Avalokita. Tell him this in reply. O fool, you have ever adopted an evil course with us. Although you lack power, you now challenge us to war. Depending on others' prowess, you utter threats. A real kshatriya fights his enemies depending upon his own power. Since you are unable to do so, why do you roar so much? Seeing that Yudhisthira had finished, Avalokita rose from his seat to depart. Krishna checked him. Also say this to Duryodhan. O sinful one, you too think that I shall be of no consequence in this war, as I will not fight. Do not make such a miscalculation. I will act as Arjuna's charioteer, and you will see him everywhere, destroying your forces as fire burns dry grass. Even if you go beyond the three worlds or enter the nether regions, you will see Arjuna's chariot there tomorrow. You also think Bhima has indulged in idle threats, but you can consider that he has already drunk Dushasana's blood. Neither Yudhisthira nor his brothers are in the least afraid of you. You are strong only in speech. As Krishna stopped speaking, Arjuna leapt to his feet. He was not satisfied with the curt response he had given to Duryodhan. He spoke again. Tell this to your master. O worst of men, having installed Bhishma as your commander, you were boasting that Arjuna and his brothers will never attack him. But I will make him my first target. Arjuna's voice seethed with restrained rage as he went on. Although the worshipful grandfather's senses are under control, and he possesses great wisdom. He has taken your side and chosen to die. I will not hesitate to direct my arrows toward him. O Duryodhan, your hopes are in vain. You are arrogant, harsh, inhuman, addicted to vice, partial, and you hate virtue. You will soon receive the consequences of your nature. When I am angry and have Krishna as my second, what hope can you have for success? Your relatives will soon lament your death. When you are struck down by Bhima, you will recall your foolishness. When Arjuna sat down, Avalokita bowed before Yudhisthira, anxious to depart. Reassuring him, Yudhisthira said, Say this to Duryodhan also. You have judged me improperly. I do not desire to harm even worms or ants, what to speak of my relatives. Thus I was prepared to accept only 5 villages to avoid this war. It is only due to you that this calamity has arisen, O man of meager understanding. Overpowered by lust, you could not accept Krishna's advice, and for that reason you rant like one deprived of his senses. What is the use of your words? Come out and fight along with your friends. Death awaits you. Bhima wrung his hands together and breathed heavily. Although he would have accepted a peaceful solution to the conflict, he could not deny his joy at the prospect of finally confronting the sinful Kauravas. Aluka's message had stoked his long-cherished anger to the point of distraction. But he would have to wait until morning. It would be a long night. Suppressing his rage, Bhima spoke again to Aluka, even more harshly. "This is my final word to Duryodhan. O sinful one, either remain in Hastinapur or lie in the belly of a vulture. These are the only choices left for you now. I swear by truth that my words made in the council hall will come to pass. I will drink Dushasan's blood, and I will smash your thighs. Know me as the death of all Dhritarashtra's sons." As Aluka turned and bowed to the assembled kings, Jishtadyumna's voice rang out. "O Aluka, tell Duryodhan that I was born to kill Drona. He and all his followers will die at my hands. There is no doubt. What more need I say?" Aluka went out of the tent backwards, bowing from the waist with his palms folded. He ran over to his chariot, leapt aboard, urging his horses back to the Kaurava camp. Yudhisthira began to move his army into position on the battlefield. Jishtadyumna appointed specific tasks to the principal warriors. Each chariot fighter was to protect the divisions of foot soldiers from the enemy charioteers. Equals should fight equals. The chiefs of the army were allotted chiefs on the opposing side. Bhima would fight with Duryodhan, Sahadev with Shakuni, Nakula with Ashvatthama, Sikandi with Bhishma, Uttamajau with Kripa, and Jishtadyumna would engage with Drona. Abhimanyu, whom he considered as powerful as Arjuna, was ordered to engage with all the kings supporting Duryodhan, while Arjuna had the task of protecting the entire army. Gradually, the Pandava forces arrayed themselves. By evening, everyone was in position, ready to march into battle the next morning. Duryodhan was sitting amid all his generals when Aluka returned and delivered the Pandava's replies. The prince sneered and turned to Bhishma. "The war begins tomorrow, O grandfather. What should be done now?" Bhishma, having surrendered himself to the certainty of war and the hopelessness of making Duryodhan see sense, replied, "After bowing before Kumara, the god of war, I will act as your general. I am as capable of organizing armies as Brihaspati. Conversant with every means of attack and defense employed by men, gods, and demons, I will confound the Pandavas. I will fight according to the rules laid down in the holy books, all of which I know. Let your fears be gone." Duryodhan did not like hearing that he might be afraid. "I am not afraid, even of the gods and the asuras united. O you of long arms, I tell you this truly. How much less afraid I am when I have you as my commander and Drona by my side? O best of men, with you fighting for me, I think kingship of the gods would not be hard to attain." Duryodhan paused reflectively. Surely his army was invincible, especially under Bhishma and Drona's leadership. But the Pandavas had so far proved difficult to overpower, even without the support of an army. Now they had amassed 7 divisions of warriors, ready for war, and the brothers, protected by the wily Krishna, would fight filled with rage. He had made sure of that. The Kaurava looked inquisitively at Bhishma. "I desire to hear from you about the strengths and weaknesses of the enemy, and also of ourselves. Please tell me everything you know." Sitting before a large number of warriors in Duryodhan's tent, Bhishma said, "O king, listen as I describe who are the Ratas, Maharatas, and Atiratas in your army. There are thousands of Ratas on your side, each capable of contending with 1,000 warriors at once. There are also numerous Maharatas who can stand against 10,000, and many Atiratas who can face almost unlimited number of opponents. You, O son of Gandhari, are an Atirata, and your brothers are all Maharatas. All of you are skillful elephant and chariot drivers, and expert with weapons. You will slay the Pandava forces in large numbers." Bhishma then described the strength of every principal warrior on the Kauravas' side. He described Kritavarma, Shalya, Kripa, Drona, Ashvatthama, and Balika as Atiratas. When he came to Karna, usually considered an Atirata, and upon whom Duryodhan had pinned his hopes, Bhishma said, "Because of Parasaram's curse and the loss of his celestial armor, he is no longer powerful. Although he brags of his prowess, and you have elevated him to a higher station than he deserves, he is of little consequence. In battle he becomes confounded and is too soft on the enemy. In my opinion, he is only half a Rata. When he comes before Arjuna, he will not escape with his life." Drona agreed, "It is so. Whatever you say is never false." Karna started up from his seat, his eyes angry. "O grandfather, you are ever given to piercing me with your sharp words. What sin have I committed that you derive such pleasure from insulting me? I tolerate it only for Duryodhan's sake. In my opinion, you too are only half a Rata. I do not speak an untruth when I say that you are the enemy of the entire universe. You are the Kuru's enemy in the guise of a friend. Who else would seek to create disunion among our forces and sap their energy by mean descriptions of their power? By saying that one is greater than another, based on your own estimation, you simply discourage the fighters. You are moved only by desire and hatred." Karna's voice filled the tent. He could no longer tolerate Bhishma's stinging words. Clenching his fists, he turned toward Duryodhan. "O king, abandon this wicked man at once. If you do not, he will soon destroy your army by sowing the seeds of discord. What are the use of his estimations? Let me go out to meet the Pandava armies. They will soon be routed like bulls meeting a tiger." Bhishma boasts of being able to fight the universe, but his words are vain and empty. He is old and senile. His intelligence has become like a boy's. Reject him at once and choose me. Alone I can slay the Pandavas and all their followers. But I will not do it while Bhishma is still on the battlefield. The glory and fame of a victory goes to the commander, and not to the individual fighters. I will do nothing to increase Bhishma's fame. When he is killed, I will come out and display my prowess." Bhishma looked contemptuously at Karna. "The time for battle has arrived. Long have I known this calamity would come. Now the burden of this battle, vast like the ocean, rests upon my shoulders. I have no desire to create dispute among our men. For this reason only do you still live. O son of Asuta, although I am now old and you are young, I would still immediately destroy your desire for battle and take your life." The Kuru commander felt his anger rising. "Good men do not approve of self-praise, but I will say something now because I have lost my temper. When I attended the Swayamvara at Kashi, I single-handedly overpowered all the kings on earth. What have you done? You are an ill-starred man, and since your arrival, the Kurus have met with disaster. Prove your words in battle. I will see your actual strength when I see you escape from Arjuna, O man of wicked intelligence." Duryodhan leapt up. "Be peaceful, O son of Ganga. I need both you and Karna in this fight. No doubt you will both perform heroic deeds. Leave aside this petty squabbling and tell me more of the strength and weaknesses of the two sides. The fight will soon begin." Still glaring at Karna, Bhishma began to describe the Pandava's strengths. "The pious King Yudhisthira is himself a mighty Maharata. He will roam about in battle like fire itself. His brother Bhimasen is powerful beyond measure. His strength is not human, and in a fight with either mace or arrows, he is without equal. The two sons of Madri are peerless fighters. Remembering their hard suffering in the forest, they will release the poison of their anger on your men. O King, all five Pandavas are great soul devotees of the Supreme Lord. They are invincible. They have all practiced asceticism and are devoted to virtue. Their prowess is incomparable, as you saw at the Rajasuya when they conquered the earth. Even as children, you saw their extraordinary strength, and that is when you first became envious of them. In my view, you should avoid them in battle. Bhishma looked intently at Duryodhan as he spoke. Regarding the copper-eyed Arjuna, who has Narayan as his ally, I say this. No brave warrior in either camp can match him in any way. Even among the gods, Gandharvas, Nagas, Rakshasas, and Yakshas, he has no equal, what to speak of among men. He has the Gandiva bow, a divine chariot drawn by horses that can fly at the speed of the wind, impenetrable celestial armor, and two inexhaustible quivers. He knows every celestial weapon. He will wreak havoc in your army, O King. Only myself or the preceptor can advance against him. There is no third warrior capable of standing before him when he pours forth his showers of arrows. But he is young and fit, while both Jonah and I are old and worn out. He now waits for battle with Keshava at his side. All the kings in Duryodhan's tent heard Bhishma's description of Arjuna and felt shorn of power. Bhishma described the other fighters on the Pandava side. Having named many of them as Atiratas and Maharatas, he spoke about Sikandi. You have all heard that he is destined to kill me, but he was born a woman, and I will not therefore face him in battle. Listen now as I tell you his history, which I have heard from Narad Rishi.